Hello and welcome to Baylor Connections, a conversation series with the people shaping our future. Each week we go in depth with Baylor leaders, professors, and more discussing important topics in higher education, research, and student life. I'm Derek Smith and our guest today is Robbie Barber. Robbie Barber is an associate professor of art in sculpture and 3D design at Baylor, joining the university in 2000. A professional artist as well as a professor, his work is influenced by travels throughout rural America, with a focus on the visual character of the country's vernacular architecture. Barber was a founding member of the Texas Atomic Iron Commission, through which he has participated in numerous workshops and iron pours. He recently participated in the SLOS Cast Iron Conference in Birmingham and, in conjunction with Creative Waco, will soon unveil a giraffe that he sculpted for Cameron Park that you'll soon be able to see on the way into the park. That's very exciting to look forward to that, and we'll talk to you about that a little more on the program. But I'll tell you, if you're sitting at your computer right now and you want to look at some of his art as we talk today, you can visit his website, robbiebarber.com. Robbie Barber, thanks so much for joining us. Great to have you on the program today.
All right. Thank you. Glad to be here.
This will be a different topic. You know, I've enjoyed talking to some of your fellow artists in a number of different areas. And as we think about sculpting and what that means as we can enjoy public art and what goes into that, I'm excited to talk about something new with you. Right. So let's start out by if you could take us inside your world a little bit, inside your studio. If we walked in there with you and sat off to the side as you worked, what would we see, sense? What would we hear? What would we smell? What would that be like?
That's interesting. Controlled chaos might be the best way to describe it. The way I work, I use a mixed media, so I do a lot of welding, a lot of woodworking, and probably my forte is working with found objects. And so found objects, basically, I go to flea markets and things like that and buy objects. And I essentially have a library of objects to work with. So it's kind of like being a pack rat. If you go in my studio, you can't hardly move through it without bumping into something. And that's intermingled with all my tools, things like table saws and welders and things like that. And so it's controlled chaos with maybe chaos winning out.
What you mentioned found items. If you were out at an antique shop or show, what would catch your eye if you passed by it?
Well, you know, the fun thing is just being open to anything. But just giving an example of something I've been collecting lately is sort of antique wheelchairs. I have about three or four wheelchairs and, you know, old wooden ones. And, I mean, they're just amazing objects visually. Plus, they have a lot of power to them conceptually to me. And the sculptures I've been working on that deal with the vernacular architecture, it's really about the passage of time and, you know, what age does to us. And so when I, sculptures you would see on the website, basically I would take an old house or old barn and put it onto a wheelchair. And there's this interesting connection that gets drawn between them that kind of creates a new way of looking at both subjects. Hopefully it makes you think of, you know, times gone by, a life that's lived, tragedies, triumphs, basically a metaphor for a person's life. So.
And again, you can visit robbiebarber.com to see some of this art that we're discussing on the program. So if you get a little bit of a description of your work here, but let's delve into it a little bit more. Mm-hmm. Your style and its influences, I know in part was shaped by your upbringing in North Carolina. How did that impact the way you approach your art?
Well, it's interesting because as an artist, I don't know if you're fully aware of that. You know, so it's really been, you know, the fact that I'm 54 now and being able to look back and think about my life and, you know, what's really has influenced me. I think you're often in the game making work and you don't get that time to reflect sometimes. But lately I've been able to kind of look back and see that just growing up on the farm, probably my strongest memories today are from that time period growing up, working on my dad's farm, working with the people there. I worked in tobacco. I harvested tobacco as a youth and made summer money that way. And I didn't realize the visual character of the land and the landscape and the buildings until I left there. So it was really when I went to graduate school to go to Arizona, and the first time I came back, that Christmas, I was like, wow, it was stunning. But just seeing things like the old lapboard barns, the old tobacco barns, the houses, and I realized that that was a very unique part of the world. So I started creating sculptures that dealt with that and used that as subject matter, and that was a really new thing for me. And the realization that I could really take my life, what was something very personal to me, and have it be the subject that I was dealing with was a revelation at the time. So,
visiting with Robbie Barber, Baylor professor and sculptor, and you paint that picture of working on the farm as a child. When did art first begin to cross your mind as a possibility?
Well, I think it was probably always that way. Just as a kid, I loved to draw. Loved to draw really weird things. I loved reading comic books. Comic books are my big influence, so going to school, I always gravitated towards the art classes, and it was a very small school, but I was kind of the art child, the art kid in the class. And when I had a chance to go to college at East Carolina University, they have a great art department, but I didn't really realize it at the time. I was undecided. That was very stressful for about a semester. I talk to my students here at Baylor about that all the time, about maybe trusting your gut a little bit more than overthinking things. So after about a semester of undecided, I walked into the art building, and I was like, wow. You know, it was a gut feeling of it was amazing. Felt like I was at home. So I started taking art classes, and I just knew that that was what I was meant for.
What about sculpting? How'd you gravitate towards that?
Well, I think that probably comes from, you know, being raised on the farm, just because everything I did was so physical. So riding motorcycles, working on fences, moving hogs, you know, loading hogs. Just everything was physical. And I also remember reaching a certain age of really wanting to know how to build stuff, but I didn't know how to build stuff. I didn't have tools. I didn't have anyone who would show me that. So, but I just think it really came from working with my hands and being very active physically.
This is Baylor Connections. We are visiting with Robbie Barber, associate professor in art at Baylor and a professional sculptor. What was the process like for you from becoming interested in that to becoming a professional? You've been exhibited, your work's been exhibited all over the country. And what was that growth process like for you?
Well, you know, I don't want to oversimplify it, but it's tiny steps, really. I mean, it's like one little brick built on another. My experiences as an artist what really dictated that growth, I think, really was related to school and academia, just because once I realized in undergraduate school that I could be an artist, I could major in art, where do you go to be with other artists? And it was at the school. So just, you know, taking classes, learning how to do this thing one semester, learning how to do it the next semester. I mean, the art world in America now, academically, it's they're intertwined, I think. I mean, they're certainly separate on many levels, but for my career at least, school was a place to really learn. When I went to graduate school, the reason I went is I knew that I knew enough about art to know I didn't know enough about art and that I needed to learn more. I didn't plan on being a teacher. I just wanted to be a better artist. So went somewhere very different, Arizona. I chose it for that reason. Just really continued that growth as an artist. And like I said, building one brick on top of another. And then you get out and you say, hey, you know, I'm going to be an artist. I'm going to conquer the world. And then life hits you. And you realize, oh, no, I have to get a real job. Mm-hmm. I decided at that point that maybe I would try teaching. The interesting thing that maybe a lot of people don't realize is that when you get a master's degree in art, I mean, they don't teach you how to teach. I mean, you're self-taught. And so so it's really like a second career. I remember going through those rough times in the beginning and having projects with my students that didn't work out, and it's like, oh my, that was terrible. Mm-hmm. Let's revamp that. So anyway, But that so it's you make connections through meeting other teachers at other schools. That's probably been the biggest thing lately is meeting colleagues, sculpture teachers at other institutions. I know that you and I talked a little bit about casting, or maybe we will talk a little bit about it, but that's really a community-based situation. And so, you know, one thing leads to another. That's how you get exhibitions. I mean, to be able to show, to be able to go out of the country. I've been on a couple of residencies in Germany. I've had a show in Japan. And a lot of that has to do with the networking and the meeting of colleagues at other institutions.
We are visiting with Robbie Barber. And Robbie, as you approach a project, you have an idea, you have an opportunity that comes your way. What then? What then? You've got the idea, but how does that begin to take shape?
Well, I talked about found objects earlier, and with that particular body of work, in my vernacular series, it really starts with the object. So a lot of times I will buy or acquire a found object and, you know, I'll stare at it, think about it, and usually it'll give me an idea. So I might do a little bit of sketching, but not really. I don't draw much in my process. So it really just starts with the objects and playing with the objects. I also, with this vernacular series, I shoot a lot of photographs. I travel and I photograph. And so I have really a library. I have books of photographs that I've taken. And so it's really, at that point, it becomes maybe a matchmaking type situation where I have a found object and I say, how can I realize this? You know, how can I make this into a sculpture? So I go through my series of barns and I'll say, oh, this is for tobacco barns, you know, and I might have 20 images of tobacco barns. So anyway, there's a marriage there that happens in the studio where I really am holding the photograph up and seeing how this would work. And then at that point, once I decide, I make models, sometimes out of cardboard, life size, so I can get the fit right, and then just start building from there.
You mentioned you have a large photo library and you notice things along the way. If we were to drive the back roads with you, maybe here in Texas or in North Carolina, what would you notice? And not just notice in terms of the physical presence of something, but maybe even what it means or what it represents to you.
Well, you know, the thing that catches my eye first is are things that have a history to them. And so really, you know, I know I've mentioned barns, houses, and things like that, but that's what really puts a hook in me, especially if it's got some age to it, it's got some history to it. It's like it's almost like it's speaking to me. It's telling me something. You know, from a visual standpoint, it's texture, it's color. So usually when I go on a road trip, it doesn't take much to get me to pull off on the side of the road. Matter of fact, I can't really get where I'm going. I'll spend hours like that. But you know, photographing it as an object is one thing. But also, if it's possible, I get to go up close and look closer, look at the details. And you know, one interesting thing is I try to study construction. You know, just how things are built and older structures, you know, are built differently than they are today. So sometimes that will affect how I wind up building the piece. So
we're talking to Robbie Barber, and Robbie, we've talked about vernacular and found items, but as you mentioned, you were recently in Birmingham for the SLOS Cast Iron Conference, mm-hmm. and working with iron is another medium for you. Mm-hmm. Let's talk about, in general, what tools you most prefer to use, and then let's delve into that working with iron a little bit. What do you most enjoy working with?
Okay. Well, the interesting thing about casting. You know, it could be any metal, it could be bronze, could be iron, but casting in general is a very different process than the other work we were talking about. And therefore, it really changes your ideas. I remember when I had a chance to get into casting and I met these colleagues and it was this big community thing where they all worked together to cast. I tried some of my house sculptures and they just didn't work out. I mean, they just did not fit that media. So I had to really revamp and create a whole new body of work for that if I wanted to be part of this new community that I had come across. So basically what I do with this body of work, I do these figurative I call them a figurative series. And maybe a short way to describe it is I make these veggie people, mm-hmm. where I take vegetables, gourds and pears and things like that, and I pull molds off of them. Because with casting, especially iron casting, you're dealing with sand molds. So it's a very technical kind of thing where you pull the sand mold off of the vegetable, and then I carve into the mold itself. And so I create sort of heads and faces and things like that. So they actually become portraits of people. They're done in a tongue-in-cheek, humorous style. Mm-hmm. You know, it's important to me that it be fun, and maybe cause people to chuckle. And so that body of work is very different than the other body of work, and really affected by the process and of creating it.
Well, what is that balance for you of creativity and craftsmanship? Because you really have to have, it would seem like, a pretty hefty dose of both.
Well, I think I discovered early on that I loved craft. I loved working with tools. That's a big part of what I do and why I love doing it. And, you know, since becoming a teacher, I've found that I love teaching other people how to use tools. Maybe what's different with me and some other artists is I love all tools, all media, and that becomes a problem at some point just because of the space and just having the tools themselves. There's a real relationship between the elements and principles of design, what you're designing and what you're making it out of and what tools you're using. There's a really symbiotic relationship there, and so I really enjoy working with that relationship.
This is Baylor Connections. We are visiting with Robbie Barber, a sculptor and associate professor of art at Baylor. And we're going to be able, people in Waco will soon be able to see some of your work in a prominent location. You've sculpted a giraffe that visitors to Waco's Cameron Park Zoo just down the road from campus will be able to enjoy. Take us inside that project a little bit and how it came together.
Sure. Well, in I believe it was 2017, Creative Waco put out a national international call for animal-themed sculptures to be placed along the Brazos River, basically down near the zoo entrance and where it kind of winds back up towards Indian Springs Park. Their plan was to sprinkle zoo-related sculptures along that jogging trail. And so they put out this call, and, you know, just ironic that I live in the town that's going to do this. And my whole career, I always wanted to do a public commission. You know, most of my art career is in the studio by myself, making work pretty much for myself, mm-hmm. and then being able to do solo shows and show people my vision. But in this case, public work, a very different way of working, and I always wanted to do one. It was kind of a bucket list item. So I said, well, this is the opportunity I can't pass up. I was a little worried at first because, you know, the subject matter was so different than what I was used to and even what I was interested in. I said, is it possible for me to make something that I enjoy and they will enjoy? So I took a leap of faith, did it, and found it really surprisingly fulfilling. It was really a challenge to figure out how to make this thing. I proposed a giraffe, a life-size giraffe, so it's 18 feet tall. Wow. It's made out of stainless steel pipe, so it's basically a linear. It's like a line drawing. So when you see it, you'll see that it's abstracted because of it just being the linear version of a giraffe. But it was a lot of fun, a lot of pain, actually, a lot of hours. I know how to weld a variety of different ways, but TIG welding was something I had done a little bit, but not much. And this required all TIG welding, so I had to really get good at it. And welding stainless is different than other metals. So from the technical side, it was very challenging, very fulfilling. And visually, it was a joy to work on. I just was surprised at how much fun it was to put these lines in space and to see. It's very lyrical looking to me. And so anyway, I hope Waco likes it.
When we're going to be able to see that out there?
Well, not yet. It's been delayed. There were some issues I don't have all the details, but there were some issues related to the bases being poured for these sculptures. It had to do with the fact that it's down by the river and being in a floodplain. Sure. That complicated matters and, you know, maybe some unforeseen complications. And so right now the city of Waco, as best I can understand it, they're working out the kinks and trying to get it figured out. And so we're just kind of waiting for them to figure that out.
What challenges did making something 18 feet tall present?
Well, it was interesting. I gave a lot of thought to that. It's like, how do I do that? How do I finish it? And I literally had to finish the body first. Like, so from the neck down, I mean, finished 100%. And so that was tough. I had made a fairly detailed model, and I didn't realize how important that wound up being. I had to literally follow that model. It was like a guide in the jungle. And so I finished the bottom, the body. That's probably about 6.5 feet tall. And I could manage that myself, you know, turning it over, moving it around. My son would help me a little bit. But the neck became the challenge because that's an extra, 10 feet or so. So I had to lay it over on its side and add the neck. And I was able to stand it up just barely in my studio. I had like 2 inches to spare without the head, okay? Mm-hmm. So I had to finish the neck virtually complete. So I put the head on, and it was just one of those things where you just couldn't see it. I couldn't see it in its entirety until I literally took it out of the studio. And, of course, at that point, it had to be literally finished.
Wow.
So it was really exciting when I got it out of the studio the first time and said, wow, it actually works. It looks right. So, yeah.
Well, Professor Barber, we are winding down on the program just another moment as I'm joining this conversation. I want to ask you, you mentioned that this was an opportunity to just strive for that you couldn't pass up. What does public art mean to you and the fact that you're able to create something that people here in this community, your family's been a part of for nearly 2 decades, can enjoy?
Well, public art is it's great that you can make something that reaches so many people. You hope that you challenge them. I think all artists want their viewers to be challenged in some way. They want their work to be seen as interesting. So I just think it's an honor to be able to have a piece out there, and I just hope Waco enjoys it.
Well, we'll look forward to that, and I know if people check online, whether it's through the Waco Trib or through Baylor or other places, we'll find out more about when that's available. Professor Barber, I've enjoyed this conversation. Thanks so much for joining us.
All right. Thank you. Really enjoyed it.
Thank you. Robbie Barber, an Associate Professor of Art in Sculpture and 3D Design at Baylor, our guest today on Baylor Connections. I'm Derek Smith. A reminder, you can hear this and other programs online, baylor.edu/connections.